Welcome to the second part of a CHEST webinar on unraveling cases of sepsis with Alice Gallo, Katie Pendleton, Angel Kaus, and Chris Carroll, supported by a grant cooperative agreement from the CDC. Part two is focused on a pediatric case.
I'm going to ask Chris to start us off on this one. You have a patient that was admitted to your ICU one day ago after being intubated in your ED for airway protection after being found comatose by their family members, secondary to an intentional citalopram overdose. On rounds today, your patient is tachycardic and febrile. Is this sepsis?
Well, I think I would need a little more information, but my first gut answer is no. I do not think this is sepsis.
If I told you that the heart rate was 130 and the fever was 39 and your patient was 16 years old,
I still would say he's probably not septic. So, okay. So sepsis in kids was defined back in 2005. As needing two or more age-based SIRS criteria, tachycardia, bradycardia, high respiratory rate, fever, or leukocytosis or leukopenia. So 130 might put him above the range for tachycardia for a 16-year-old. So that might be tachycardic and febrile. So he would have two. But to be septic, he would also need suspected or proven infection, which is something this patient does not have. I do not have a high suspicion of an infection in an overdose patient, 12 hours later. And also this patient would need cardiovascular dysfunction, ARDS, or two or more non-cardiovascular organ system dysfunctions. And so we need some laboratory assessments to see that. So there are some differences in pediatric and adult sepsis. A lot of it's the same. It's important to treat with early antibiotics. Fluid resuscitation and hemodynamic stabilization are important. Source control is important. But there's some differences in kids. In pediatrics, and this is not particularly applicable to this case, but I'm going to use this opportunity to talk about the differences. In pediatrics, myocardial dysfunction seems to play a greater role in the pathophysiology of pediatric sepsis, particularly in infants and neonates. There's a developmental basis for this. Children have higher heart rates and smaller stroke volumes than adults. And they also have a limited capacity to increase their stroke volumes during stress. Children also, their LV systolic performance is much more dependent on their afterload. So when you have a drop in your afterload, your myocardial contractility really drops. And so it's more important to keep children's blood pressure up. And that is why children will frequently get put on inotropic support to raise their blood pressure. Also, there are electrolyte issues you need to be more worried about. Children have a higher metabolic rates and poorer glycogen storage, so you need to be more worried about glucose. Their myocardium is more calcium dependent, so you need to be more worried about their calcium levels. And they also have proportionally higher extracellular fluid to intercellular fluid, so it predisposes them to rapid fluid losses and increases their vulnerability to hypovolemic shock. Also, if you give a lot of fluid to children, it may not raise your blood pressure as much as you think it will. So you really need to move to inotropic support earlier rather than later in children. So, but back to this case, I don't think this person has sepsis. This adolescent young overdose has sepsis just because it doesn't meet the criteria.
That's fascinating. Thank you so much for so many amazing pearls. I just learned so much. And Holt, tell me if this was a 29-year-old in your ICU, second day after citalopram overdose, now tachycardic and febrile. What do you think?
So I think we need a little bit more information, but a few things that raise some flags is, one, the intentional overdose. I would wonder if there's any history of any substance abuse that may predispose this patient to have any sort of bacterial infection, endocarditis, which certainly could raise the concern for sepsis. And the other element is the comatose presentation that led to intubation, whether the patient may have had an episode of aspiration. Although it's probably too soon to have aspiration pneumonia, the patient could have aspiration pneumonitis. I mean, now with a citalopram overdose, I mean, the other thing that we need to think about is whether the patient may have a serotonin syndrome as main presentation. But the question is, are we going to forego the first dose of antibiotics right away because we have an alternative presentation? And I would err on the side of let's go ahead and get cultures, get a lactate, and let's give the first dose of antibiotics to cover the appropriate organisms. I mean, once we have a little bit more information, like an X-ray to see if there's an infiltrate. And then once we have a little bit more information in a few hours, we can decide whether the second dose is necessary or not. But just because there is potentially another explanation for this, I would not withhold the first dose of antibiotics because as one of my colleagues once mentioned, it's about the margin of error you have, right? And if this is sepsis, the margin of error is really not existent because if this is sepsis and we don't give antibiotics, the patient is going to do poorly. If we give the first dose and we reassess 6 to 8 hours later and we determine, okay, this was not sepsis, then we can always stop the antibiotics. And actually, that's something we should do on a routine basis. Every day, we need to reassess if the next dose of antibiotics is necessary or not. Because if it's not, then I mean, we're producing more harm by keeping the antibiotics that are no longer necessary.
That's awesome. Katie,
I want to amend my point that the question I was asked is this sepsis? Not whether I would give antibiotics. Yeah. I think I probably would give a first dose of antibiotics, much like Angel said.
That's what I was going to ask you before we went to Katie for her comments. I was going to ask you, Chris. So you would also give antibiotics?
I probably would, but I think I would need to know if this is a teenager who's waking up and trying to pull the breathing tube out. I want to know a little bit more about this patient before I would commit to that. If this is a patient that is waking up and I'm going to pull the breathing tube out and is tachycardic because we're not adequately sedating him. Or something like that, then there's a lot of things to consider here. But I agree completely with Angel that early antibiotics are important and you can always stop them.
Mm-hmm. Just one more thing is, looking for clonus, if this is serotonin syndrome, you have more information that gives you the diagnosis, then your pretest probability will be a little bit higher for an alternative diagnosis. So.
Absolutely.
Katie, how about you? What do you think?
I really would like to bring more spice to this fight, but I have to say that I agree with basically everything both of my colleagues have said. I like the what Angel said about the margin of error in a framework that I like to use. I have borrowed loosely from a paper that was published in Annals of the ETS by Hallie Prescott and Jack Awashna about what do we do when there's uncertainty around antibiotics? And roughly, is this, somebody too sick to guess wrong, or sort of stable enough that you have time to be thoughtful, weighed against how likely an alternative explanation for the presentation is versus not? And at least as presented, this is somebody who's maybe mild to medium level ICU sick, but with a very plausible alternative explanation for the presentation. And outside of the risk of aspiration being found comatose, I would say without any convincing evidence of infection at this time. So much like the other said, this is somebody that if antibiotics were started in the ED or even by the ICU team, I would probably give that first dose of antibiotics, but this is somebody that I would likewise be looking to rapidly de-escalate on. Just since we're sort of throwing around things that can look like sepsis, but aren't, necessarily sepsis, although unlikely in this presentation, other things to think about would be co-ingestion of other street drugs, for instance, that can cause presentations similar to this, methamphetamines, bath salts, some of those things. Alcohol withdrawal can certainly look like this in a 16-year-old or a 29-year-old, I'm guessing, right? And then just to round it out, hyperthyroid or pheochromocytoma would be other things that would be on the list of non-sepsis conditions that could cause tachycardia and hyperthermia.
Yeah. And It's okay not to have spice. I think there was enough spice, and that was my intention when I on purpose didn't give more information, because that's the uncertainty that I want to make sure that our listeners notice that all of us deal with, whether in peds, whether in adolescents, whether in adults, young adults. ICU is a lot of science, but it's a lot of art too. And what I always say about antibiotics is, if we don't start them on time, we're going to regret it. And we cannot go back in time and wish we had started them, but we can always stop them at any time. So I would probably have started antibiotics also on this patient. Same thing that Angel said. What if he aspirated? What if was one of those things? They were having too much fun and someone just dropped him in the ED or her in the ED. And we don't know more story for sometimes 24 hours when we finally can find someone, you know? So I love this discussion. That's exactly what I intended when I came up with this. I love this. Anything else?
It is amazing how often we're agreeing with each other.
I know, but like, I love how we all had the same uncertainty. So like, was this anything else? Was it other drug? Was it just this drug? Does this person have other metabolic illnesses? Like you said, Chris, so like electrolytes, and like Katie said, something thyroid, something feel, rare things that can happen and will show up on any given Tuesday. Also time to antibiotics. We all know from like robust literature that it does change outcomes in sepsis and septic shock. So we cannot regret and wish we had started them 12 hours ago, but we can always stop them now. So,
yeah. And that is the challenge with sepsis as opposed to, for example, MI or stroke, in which you have pretty pathognomonic signs or symptoms that will tell you this is it. In sepsis, the presentation is so nonspecific. Mm-hmm. That you have, in a way, to guess and give your best educated opinion whether this is sepsis or not. And if you're in doubt, just err on the side of caution and treat it. Give the first dose. You can always stop them later. But as you said, if you don't start them and then 24 hours later, this was sepsis. You lost 24 hours. The patient is going to do a lot worse.
Yeah. And another thing also another point that I feel was very important for us to talk about this very, very undifferentiated case is that all of you mentioned something about physical signs. Then again, like you said, Angel, yes, MI, chest pain, but you also have troponins that are going up. Chest pain, EKG and troponins, sure, you have them three, but someone who was brought from the ED unresponsive, you have to rely on your clonus. You have to rely on pupils changing. You have to rely on other things to maybe come up with your ultimate diagnosis a few hours later after admission, right?
Yep. We only had a magic bullet that will tell us this is sepsis. It will be a lot easier, but that probably is not in the horizon for a long time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you guys are lucky, you're an adult. So there's much less research into pediatric sepsis than there is into adult sepsis, and our definitions are older and squishier and harder to quantify than in the adult literature, which is much more scientifically based.
Chris, should we send a call out to our listeners to reach out to you to start doing research on pediatric sepsis?
There are good people doing the research on sepsis. We should be getting a new definitions within the next year or two. But
good. Awesome. Thank you so much for all of you for joining me this afternoon for this CHEST podcast supported by HHS CDC Grand Cooperative Agreement. Please go to the CHEST Sepsis Topic Collection page, and you can find the ways to reach out to us there and also leave comments and questions for us there.